everyone. Thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's May 2019, and you're listening to Episode 121, Evangelism and Pearls Before Swine. On this episode, I'm joined by Eric Johnson. Eric lives in Utah and works with Mormonism Research Ministry. He is co-editor of the book Sharing the Good News with Mormons and co-author of Answering Mormons' Questions and Mormonism 101. Eric has written an article for our Volume 42, Number 1 issue of the journal in our Effective Evangelism column. Effective Evangelism is a column in which we give practical advice on how to reach people of other faiths and of no faith with the gospel. Eric's article is called Offering Pearls to Pigs and Dogs. Eric, it's good to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
I know a lot of Christians have probably commented to one another sometimes that in certain evangelistic situations, and maybe even with family members, it's best not to share with them because it's, quote unquote, the proverbial pearls before swine. And that's because of the passage in Matthew chapter 7, verse 6. So could you talk to us a little bit about that passage and the context of it?
Yeah, Jesus is speaking in the Sermon on the Mount, and in this passage, I think it goes with the verses that are around it, but he brings up two different kinds of animals, the dog and the pig. And now the pig in the King James, that's known as swine, and we know that the pigs were unclean. They weren't kosher. In fact, I was just in Israel recently, and one of the things that people miss the most from home at breakfast at the hotels is they don't serve sausage links and bacon. And so when they get home, everybody wants to have the bacon, and it's something you miss. But in Israel, you don't serve that because it's considered to be unclean, not only for the Jew, but also for the Muslim. And we see in a passage such as Luke chapter 15, the story of the prodigal son, where that prodigal son hits rock bottom when he ends up having to take care of pigs and then eat their food. And Jesus gave that as an illustration to show disgust, how terrible what happened to him, that he had that happen. And so this idea of the pig is certainly insulting. And the dog as well, because the dogs were also unclean because they were scavenger. And in Moses' day, for instance, in Exodus chapter 22, they fed roadkill to the dogs, and the dogs licked up Naboth's and Jezebel's blood in 1 Kings 21 and 2 Kings 9. And in Luke chapter 16, with the story of Lazarus, that his sores were licked by dogs. And so Jesus certainly was meaning something by that as well. And in Revelation chapter 22, those who practice magic arts, as well as sexually immoral, murderers, and adulterers, were likened to the dogs. And so these animals not being very much admired. And so Jesus is saying, you don't give holy things to unholy creatures. And certainly is talking about the Christian gospel here.
Well, what about pearls? Because the famous little phrase that people use in regards to evangelism is, don't give pearls, don't cast your pearls before swine.
Right. Well, of course, these were valuable just like they're valuable today. Maybe not so much as they were 20 or 30 years ago where people wore pearl necklaces, but pearls are very expensive. And what you have in Matthew chapter 13 is in verses 45 through 46, this is what Jesus says. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls, who on finding one pearl of great value, went and sold all that he had. And he bought it. And so obviously this pearl is something that was the gospel, and you would do everything you could to gather that. So certainly that's what Jesus is talking about. You have the gospel, which is the pearl. And if you have that, you don't want to just give something that's holy to the animals that are not holy. And I think we can understand that even in our day.
Of course, Christians are told in the Great Commission in Matthew 28 that we're to take the gospel, to the entire world. We're to teach and preach the gospel, and we're to make disciples. And so was Jesus saying that there are times that we need to be cautious when presenting the gospel, where we shouldn't be presenting it in, just a forthright manner considering the situation.
Yeah, I mean, 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15, very famous passage for those of us who are involved in apologetics. And it says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope you have. So, of course, we're supposed to have the Great Commission to go out and make disciples. And how do you make disciples unless you evangelize first and get them converted? But at the same time, Jesus was very big on discretion. The Bible as a whole is big on discretion. For instance, the writer of Ecclesiastes says that there's a time and a place for everything. So what was Jesus saying on the Sermon on the Mount? This is what I wrote in that journal article. I said, to take what Jesus called holy, obviously representing the gospel of Christ, and set it before those who are scornful is never encouraged in the Bible. Only those that are agreeable to at least consider the presentation of truth should receive the invitation. So I think very clearly we are to present the gospel as clearly as we can in a way that people can respond to, but we don't want to force something that is not there.
So what happens if Christians present the gospel to those who are not willing or who aren't ready? What are some consequences of that? And also, how do we determine that someone is not willing or not ready? If they're hostile to us, do we determine that that's a situation in which we shouldn't present the gospel?
Yeah, you know, Proverbs is a book of wisdom. And in chapter 9, verses 7 and 8, it says this, whoever corrects a mocker invites insults. Whoever rebukes the wicked incurs abuse. Do not rebuke mockers or they will hate you. Rebuke the wise and they will love you. I think that is advice not just for 3,000 years ago, but it's advice for today and is very much related to what Jesus is talking about. Jesus in Luke chapter 10, he sends out the 72 to preach the gospel, and that's an admirable thing. They're supposed to go village to village. It's interesting what Jesus says to them, that if the gospel is rejected, he said that they should tell the antagonists that even the dust of your town that clings to our feet, we wipe off against you. And I find that interesting because Jesus wants the disciples, the 72 who went out, to tell them that it's your attitude, we're leaving, and we wipe the dust off of our feet. And he said the same thing in Matthew chapter 10, the disciples should wipe the dust from their feet when the message was rejected. Now, I'm not saying, and I'm not suggesting that we should antagonize people by saying, well, if you don't want the gospel, then I'm not going to give it to you, and be arrogant about it. That's the last thing that I think God wants us to do as Christians. But at the same time, I think we need to be willing to recognize those situations where by giving the gospel, we're not going to go anywhere. We might end up getting into arguments, and it will end up causing a dark mark on Christianity because we look like we're forceful on people, and that's not the way we want to go about it. We want to look for those situations where people are wanting to hear what we have to say, and they want to hear what the pearl is all about, and that would be the open invitation. Now, that's tricky because when you mentioned earlier, we're talking to family members. We so badly want them to know what the gospel is that sometimes we say things and we maybe have a voice inflection. Our attitude is forceful that it ends up closing the doors. And I think Paul was very big when he talked about having open doors. He didn't want to do anything unless the invitation was made, whether it was at a synagogue or even at Mars Hill. Mars Hill in Acts chapter 17 in Athens, the people who were worshiping the unknown God apparently were willing to listen to him. Most of them didn't accept it, but he did win an audience and had a chance to present. And the chapter ends by saying that there were people who ended up becoming believers because Paul took the initiative. He searched it out. He didn't just quote Bible verses. He didn't quote from the Old Testament to these pagans, but rather he quoted from their own poets. And he understood the context of the situation, and he took full advantage of it. I think we as Christians need to also be wise in how we go about it and to be able to present the gospel, but in a way that's appealing and has the potential for success, even if the majority of the people reject it. Paul still had a few people who did receive it.
I know there's some listeners that probably are thinking, you know, we have a gospel that can change people's minds and hearts. God can change them. So shouldn't we do everything we can to be bold and present the gospel to them, to people in all situations?
Oh, that's an easy answer as yes. We should want to present the gospel to everybody who comes in our path. But we have to understand, based on what Jesus said and did, based on what Paul said and did, good tactics means that sometimes it's better to refrain than present the gospel and have it ridiculed. And again, I mentioned you could end up closing doors that perhaps other people have been working with this person, and then you come along and your arrogance and your forcefulness ends up closing that door. Well, you haven't helped anybody else to come along and in the future to be able to help that person understand what truth is all about. Or those who were working with that person are going to be not happy with you, and they say, I don't want to hear it anymore because I had this Christian who was really arrogant, was a jerk, and I'm done.
So how if we're in those situations, how would you say we could discern where a conversation is going, where we should stop, you know, maybe being so forceful in our gospel presentation and pull back from that?
Yeah, I think begging for converts, and especially if they're not receptive, that's not part of the evangelistic plan that's offered by either Jesus or Paul. And what do I mean by that? Well, Jesus, as I mentioned, is all about tactics. He says that we are supposed to be shrewd as serpents and innocent as doves. What does that mean? I mean, shrewd as a serpent, and we think usually negative about serpents, but serpents are pretty wise on how they go about trying to catch that mouse, and they're going to do what they can to slyly do that. And so Jesus commends those who would be shrewd as a serpent. At the same time, there's not duplicity involved, that they're innocent as a dove. And I think of the passage in Luke chapter 16. It's a difficult passage where Jesus commends in a parable the shrewd manager who, in a worldly way, he used business sense with those who owed his master money. One guy owed him 800 barrels of olive oil. He cut it down to 400. Another, he cut from 1,000 to 800 bushels of wheat. And Jesus commended him because, and there's disagreement as to what exactly is Jesus commending dishonesty. I don't think so. Was it part of his commission that he would have received? Or had he been stealing from these people all along? And so now he's just giving it back. But the manager commended him, and Jesus did as well in that passage. And so if you notice, there are many times that Jesus does not go out of his way to share the gospel. We see that oftentimes. It's almost as if people have to beg him to tell what he knows. He waited until they were ready before he would give them solid teaching, even his disciples. And so if we understand that the gospel is precious, and if it's not going to be received, then I think Jesus is just saying this: don't put the gospel up for ridicule. Present it only when they are ready. And as I mentioned with Paul, he got upset with the Jewish leaders in the synagogues that he was visiting in the towns. And he said, enough, I'm taking the gospel to people who will receive it. And I look at the passage in Acts chapter 19, verse 9 in Ephesus. This is what the Bible says. It says, when some became stubborn and continued in unbelief, speaking evil of the way before the congregation, he withdrew from them and took the disciples with him. Now, that could on the surface sound almost kind of mean. Well, you know, yeah, they're a little tough to get through to, but, you know, try a little harder, Paul. Instead, he pulls up roots and he moves on. It's kind of like fishing. If you're a fisherman, I'm not, but I used to many years ago. And sometimes I had a favorite place that I would go to. And if it wasn't working, sometimes you have to move to another spot to do the trick. And that's what Paul would do. And so later, Paul does return to his synagogue ways after supposedly wiping his feet. But so much of his effort now turned to the Gentiles, the people who are willing to accept it. And so he used good sense, and he tried to put himself in a position where the most people could hear the good news and that the gospel could be spread, which is what he believed he was called for. And certainly the Bible shows that if it hadn't been for Paul, the outermost parts of the world would not have been reached.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Eric Johnson, and he's written an article in the Volume 42, Number 2 issue of the journal for our Effective Evangelism column. And to read his article, please subscribe to the journal A subscription is $33.50, and our content, including our free Postmodern Realities podcast, is supported by print subscriptions, and these subscriptions provide the resources to produce our print articles, our free exclusive online articles and reviews, and this podcast. So please go to our website, equip.org, and subscribe to the journal. You know, you were just talking about times in which we need to use discernment about when to share, and you're right. There are some times in the Gospels when Jesus tells people, don't tell anyone that I healed you. I mean, usually they go out and tell people anyway, but he was very judicious about that. I know that there are a lot of Christians, you know, who feel scared to share their faith, or they don't know how, or they feel ill-equipped to share their faith. So could these verses be a reason why people would not share their faith with anyone at all?
That's a good question. And unfortunately, there are too many Christians in the 21st century who have bought into the postmodern idea, the lie, that we just shouldn't rock the boat, that we're being judgmental if we say that our Christian beliefs are superior to other beliefs. But isn't that what other beliefs are saying about their views, that you're wrong and that this view is better? And so in Christianity, I believe the Bible teaches in what's called exclusivism, that there's only one way to God. And if you don't go that path, John 14:6, that you're headed in the wrong direction. So while some may say that we should leave others alone, I think the Bible shows us so much evidence that we're commanded to show God's love, not just through lifestyle evangelism. I've had too many Christians, when it comes to this issue of evangelism in the 21st century, say, well, I show them by my life and the way that I live. Well, I live in Utah, and I'm going to tell you, there are a lot of Latter-day Saints who outshine the Christians when it comes to righteous living. So just by living a good life is not going to be a reason for people to want to accept what I believe is the true God and gospel that is presented in the Bible. So that's why we send missionaries. We send them all over the world to share God's love for the people of all nations. So if someone wants to say that they're fearing rejection and what we're talking about here, don't cast your pearls before swine, and everybody's a swine, so I don't want to have that rejected, then I shouldn't even try at all. I don't think that's a possibility. Because that, again, is not the example given to us by Jesus and Paul. And instead, I think that the point of casting pearls before swine is all about how to use good tactics so that we can present the gospel in a way that will be received better than if it's forced upon them.
Well, you're someone who is active in evangelism, even street evangelism, on a regular basis. So I know that you have learn through various different types of evangelistic approaches that you've had over the years. And one of them I know that you've done is to ask questions. So why would asking questions be a good entree into sharing the gospel?
Let me give you an example. I do a lot of flying, and I fly Southwest a lot. And so I normally like to sit at a window seat, and somebody will sit usually on the aisle seat. Those are the two seats that are usually taken first, and that leaves the dreaded middle seat. And the stewardess will say, the plane is full, there's no empty seats, find a seat quickly because the plane's about to leave. And so you can see a person who's not that happy about having to sit between two of us, but ends up sitting there. Well, I always usually try to make eye contact with that person just to see who they are. And oftentimes they won't look at you. But I usually have prayed before I get on that plane. And I've told God, if you don't want me to read the magazine that I'm holding in my hand and I haven't read it for 2 months, well, then go ahead and put somebody here. And he doesn't always, but when that person sits down, I usually, if I haven't made the eye contact, I usually like to say, well, how are you? And by the reaction of the eye contact and the question, I can usually determine if that person might be open to having a conversation. Now, if they're wearing earbuds and their full attention is on their phone before we take off and their body language says, hey, leave me alone, that's my cue that I get to read my magazine and I won't be bothered because this person's not going to try to talk to me. But if they sit down, they do make some kind of eye contact, and maybe they don't have anything in their hands, like a book or a tablet, I might go further. And so I like to ask questions. Where are you headed? What do you do? You know, just basic kinds of questions you do when you meet somebody you don't know at all. And I have to be honest, it's a lot harder to do this on a plane than it used to be because we have so many things that take away our attention. But occasionally, I find a willing partner. As I mentioned, I'm from Utah, and so I'm flying out of Salt Lake City a lot. And I know that probably about a quarter of everyone on that plane is Mormon. So if the person there looks like a possible Mormon, and especially if they're wearing a BYU hat, I say, oh, so do you attend church where you live in Provo? And they'll say, yeah, I'm a Latter-day Saint. And so depending on their openness, I might say, well, could you tell me why you are LDS? Is it because you were born into the church? And there you go. Our conversation has a head start. Or maybe I'm sitting next to somebody who's not appearing to be a Mormon. So we exchange chit-chat for about 10 minutes. And I like to ask lots of questions. And then I might venture out. Sometimes it's a little risky, but I'll say, so what's your view about God? Now, if the person cringes or makes it known that they don't want to have any conversation having to do with religion, I get the cue, and that's the end of that. But I have had, a dozen or more times where the person will say, well, something to the effect of, I used to believe in God, but he hurt me, and I no longer believe. Now, can you imagine the types of questions that you can ask with that kind of a scenario? And so there's a chapter in the book that you mentioned earlier that I co-edited with Sean McDowell, Sharing the Good News with Mormons, that just came out last year with Harvest House, that Sean McDowell and I did edit. And in chapter 15, Dr. Lynn Wilder, who was once a BYU professor, and now she does a lot of evangelism, she wrote a chapter called Authentic Humble Dialogue with Mormons, The Columbo Approach. What asking question does, when you ask questions, it allows you to probe and it allows you to direct the conversation, but it lets the other person tell you where you ought to go. So using questions can be very effective, but it's going to take some practice, because I think sometimes many people think evangelism is talking and doing all the talking and not listening. And I think evangelism is oftentimes hearing what somebody has to say and then taking it to a place where maybe they're willing to hear the gospel at the end. But I think a lot of Christians make the mistake by just blurting out what they think the gospel is, and they end up alienating the person that they're with, whether it's a stranger, whether it's even a relative they know very well. So just by asking questions, you're showing interest in somebody else and allowing them to show that that you care enough to ask those questions and then to find out more. And then let it go where it may, but I have found more success doing that rather than when I've tried to preach to somebody.
I have to ask you, do you specifically take a window seat to use it for evangelistic purposes? Because most people don't ever want to be in the window seat because there's no leg room.
Oh, that's a great question, Melanie. And I'll be honest with you, it's a selfish reason, because I oftentimes like to sleep and I can't sleep on the aisle because people keep knocking into you, walking to the restroom or the carts that are serving the food. It's interesting because I flew just recently to Turkey, Greece, and Italy with my wife, and we actually we took some people with us to be able to see some of the sites where Paul was. And so I would sit on the window. My wife loves the aisle. She doesn't like anything but. And so unintentionally, but we left the middle seat open. And so we would have somebody sit in the middle of us. And so if we did get a conversation started on this last trip, it was very rare. Most people were not into any kind of conversation, but it does kind of open that opportunity up. And so I wouldn't say it's a tactic that I've used. It's just more of a selfish thing. But then I do pay attention. I stop my reading when somebody's about to sit down, and I just want to see if they're willing to have any kind of conversation during that flight.
Well, I know one of your other evangelistic approaches is to keep a sense of humor, which seems like an odd characteristic for using in evangelism. So what is that about?
Yeah, sometimes we become so uptight in trying to share the truth of our gospel faith that we end up becoming more awkward than we have to be. And so I think it's important when using humor that you don't make fun of the other person. Use yourself as a scapegoat and keep it light, because if you just start a conversation and say something to the effect, have you accepted Jesus as your Lord and Savior, you're off to a bad start. Again, you want to move in slowly in any kind of a conversation. And then when it becomes a little awkward, I think humor has a way of diffusing what could be a tense situation and actually can help the conversation move forward. So I find that using some humor lightens the mood, and it ends up making us real people.
Well, I did ask you earlier about just trying to discern when somebody would be resistant or seem like they're hostile to a conversation about God. So how do you recommend that we look for those cues?
Well, I think a lot of times we're going to know just by their body language. We're going to know by the tone and inflection of their speech. I think those are two really important ways. And if the signs say now is not the right time or place, then I think we need to back off. And I'm not suggesting that every conversation we ever have with a stranger has the sole intent of presenting the gospel. I'm not suggesting that at all. At the same time, though, if the gospel is so important to us and it turns out that we have the opportunity to bring that up, we should do so. I think we are commanded to present the gospel clearly to everyone who asks us. At the same time, if we get those signs of resistance, then it might be later. You might have that opportunity with your relative, with your friend, with your co-laborer, co-worker. Maybe not. I don't know. But I think the bottom line is what Jesus is saying, to not cast your pearls before swine, is you cannot force the issue as much as you might like them to become a Christian.
So one of the other tactics that you have is to be able to, you know, accept the response if someone said, no, I'm not interested in talking to you about this. How do we do that gracefully and not feel offended or not have it prevent us from sharing the gospel again in a different situation?
Yeah, I think there's going to be times where you really wanted to pursue and the person says, no thanks, their body language, they may even tell you, I don't want to talk about it. You say something like, have you ever wondered what the Bible had to say about having a relationship with God? And they say, no, that's just a cue that you need to move on to other topics. Maybe the conversation ends at that point. I don't know. But it's a great question you're asking. And I think everybody just has to know, based on their experience. And how do you want to be treated? Let's say you sat next to a Jehovah's Witness on a flight. I don't know. Are they going to want to share their faith there or not? I don't know how that would work. I've never had a Jehovah's Witness try to do that. But what would you expect them to do? And if they're pushy on you, you know, here, read my watchtower. I want to show you all this. I think you would feel a little bit perturbed that, wait a minute, I'm just sitting here minding my own business. I don't want to do this. So put ourselves into the feet of other people, or in the shoes of other people, I think is going to be, a good way of going about it. And I think it's all about experience. The more you do this, I think the more natural it can become.
And how do you, you know, gracefully share the gospel, especially if you know something about the topic? Obviously, you live in Utah. You're around a lot of people who are Mormons and you know a lot about Mormonism. So if someone, you know, is a Christian and they know about, you just mentioned Jehovah's Witnesses or Mormonism or atheism, how do we, you know, graciously start that discussion without, you know, maybe even telling them more about their beliefs than they might even know?
And that's where the questions come into play. I think never tell a person what he or she believes. As much as I might know about Mormonism, I don't know what they believe about specific topics. Let them tell you by saying, so what do you believe about salvation by grace? What do you believe about Jesus? What do you believe about God? The more you know about a religion and its background, I think the better you are prepared to be able to understand what they're saying, to maybe even think like they are thinking, that worldview, and to maybe even head them off at the pass. One of my favorite tactics that I like to use in a public evangelism sense is I give away the book, The Miracle of Forgiveness. Now, this is a book that was written in 1969 by 12th LDS President Spencer W. Kimball. And what he says in this book generally is, that perfection is an achievable goal and forgiveness comes only when the person forsakes sin completely. You can read the book. You can actually check out a website that I have produced called themiracleofforgiveness.com, one word, themiracleofforgiveness.com, and you can see how I use this out in a public setting. But when Mormons are walking past me, attending General Conference in Salt Lake City, or maybe they're going to a BYU football game, I stand on a public street corner offering these free books that I buy at the bookstores, the used bookstores, for $2 each. And I highlight them. And I have these available. Most of them know about the book. Some of them don't have it, and I want them to have it, but it leads me into these great conversations. So while they're walking by, I can kind of pick out who might want to have a conversation and those who don't. If the person's antagonistic, you know, that's fine. I just don't try to pursue that. But other times, they might be inquisitive. For instance, last fall, I had an incredible one-hour conversation with the BYU student at a football game right across the street from the stadium. He had stood for about 20 minutes watching to see what I was doing. He told me this later. I didn't know he was watching me, but he was intrigued. And he came up to me after about 20 minutes, and he commended me for my patience and endurance, because you're going to get some heckles and people who don't like what you're doing, even though I'm handing out a Mormon book. And then he listened as I presented the gospel to him, and it was the most productive time. I won the right to be able to share with them, and he was willing to hear what I had to say about the book. And so it turned out to be about an hour long. I spent a good amount of time with him. He ended up taking the book. He promised he was going to read it, and he was going to look at some of the biblical passages that I referred to. Now, that's a great story. But for every one of those kinds of stories, I can tell you about 1,000 denials. And that's okay, because I'm not going to get a chance to deliver the gospel as well as I could to this one person. I have to understand, Melanie, that I'm only in sales. If people want to reject the product, they have the freedom to do so. But here's the point. God is the one in production. I'm in sales. God's in production. So I need to let the master be in complete control. And if I use the good tactics, I think you're going to have opportunities to share truth in a very effective way.
Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Eric. So, Eric, it's May. So which of these vegetables that are in season this month do you prefer, asparagus or zucchini?
I think I'll go with zucchini and like it fried in oil.
You live in Utah, so do you go skiing in Utah? There's some really pretty skiing there.
You know, I live half hour away from my doorstep to being on the ski slopes in a little Cottonwood Canyon. And I went one time, I didn't have a good experience. And so, no, I don't. But people who come and visit in the winter, the only reason they come is they want to go skiing.
What's one of your most often visited websites?
Well, am I supposed to say equip.org? I do go there. I do actually go there. But I like a website that deals with a lot of different issues, just like equip.org, CARM.org, Christian Apologetic Research Ministry.org, run by my friend Matt Slick. Excellent, has a wide variety of articles for people to check out.
And what do you prefer, washing dishes or doing laundry?
Well, that's a hard one. Neither of those are jobs that I like that much. My wife won't let me do the laundry anymore ever since I put a red shirt in with the whites. And so she's banned me from doing the laundry, but I'd rather do the dishes anyway. So I'll take that.
Well, thanks, Eric, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Today's guest is Eric Johnson, who has written an article in the Volume 42, Number 2 issue of the Christian Research Journal for our Effective Evangelism column. To read Eric's article, please subscribe to the journal. A subscription is $33.50, and our content, including our free Postmodern Realities podcast, is supported by print subscribers. These subscriptions provide the resources to produce our print articles, our free exclusive online articles and reviews, and this podcast. So please subscribe to the journal, and you can do so at our website, equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. And please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.